It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
All right. Ready?
Yep.
I knocked over your microphone again earlier.
Mm-hmm.
That microphone gets knocked down so much. Hello, everyone. Welcome to... Not you, Ezzy. The Magical Talking Hat Podcast. The only podcast in the world that might actually use the word festive unironically. Probably not, though.
Who uses it ironically?
Everybody. If anybody ever calls anything festive, it's a thinly veiled attempt to say, like, tacky or whatever. You say, oh, how festive.
Oh.
Nobody ever just says, that's really festive. I like that. Like, nobody does that.
But you
don't count.
I don't know. Maybe
also,
I don't...
Also, it may specifically be an American thing, because I told that to a Scottish woman today, and she claims she uses festive unironically.
I don't know if I say anything ironically when it comes down to it.
I think you say a lot of things about me ironically.
Rarely, I might. But, I mean, I don't think I make a habit of it. Like, you know, you...
See, whereas I'm almost constantly dripped in irony.
I wonder if that's a common thing, like that... A lot of people are like that these days. Everything is sarcasm and cynicism. And
yes, the entire hipster movement is based on this.
Well, yes, we've talked about that before, but I'm often... I mean, I can be that way sometimes, of course, but not very often, and I guess I just assumed other people were...
Really? Yeah, see, this is part of your issue.
I guess.
That we'll add that to your list of being human lessons.
I wonder how many times someone has said something ironic or sarcastic and I just didn't get it because I thought they were being...
Almost every time people have spoken to you.
Huh.
I personally can have lost count of the number of times. Anyway, I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 162.
When you introduce yourself in public to people, do you say, hi, I'm William, and this is episode...
I don't get out very much.
That's true. I just wondered if that came with it now. We'll I got to the point when I was answering phones for a newspaper one time that I started to answer my home phone as though it was the newspaper. That was a little weird.
I don't think anything like that's ever happened to me.
Anyway, for those of you just joining us, we have a hat.
Wait, I don't think you said that's the only podcast something or other.
I did. The only podcast used festive.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Seriously, 30 seconds ago.
I know.
You were here.
I'm off my game because I was late.
He was. It's made me sad.
You know, I'm not... Every time I've been late, it's been mentioned. So think of how many times it's been mentioned that I've been late. Hardly any time.
Did you run into somebody you knew from prison?
No, but... You know,
is there a reasoning for it?
No. Well, no.
Traffic?
Well, I did leave a little later than usual, but that's funny because, you know, usually I'm a little bit early.
A little bit.
So you'd think if I left a little bit late, I'd just be on time.
But no.
No.
This can be a thing, though. Traffic patterns can get weird like that. Around here, if we leave when we normally leave to go to work, we're fine. If we leave slightly earlier than that, we show up about the same time because traffic is really... Like, everybody's leaving at that slightly earlier time.
Yeah. Well, you know what? This is why I don't like being late because it throws me off. I mean, and when I say I'm off, my game isn't much of a game in the first place.
Yeah, no.
At
this point, he's barely still alive. off his game means check for pulse.
Yeah. It's pretty bad. Pretty bad when I'm off my...
He can die of being off his game.
I mean, I don't really have a game. Let's... be honest, it's just for me. It's everyone
Survival
else
is your game.
Everyone else has a game, but for me, it's just an expression.
Yes.
Now you still have to explain.
While you get the pizza, I'm going to explain
what geez. The thing is. Why did you do that? I hate
so
dealing with the pizza guy.
We have a hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address.
I can't get the pizza. You have to. You've got the wallet over there.
Magicaltalkinghat@gmail.com.
I'm not going to pay for it. You're going to have to give me the money.
People email that address.
Hand me
I paid for it with a credit card. It's going to be fine.
Well, your wallet's right there. That's
because I had to look at the credit card. People email that address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with questions, comments, topics, things like that.
Hi.
All right.
Oh, but you need to...
Yeah, no, you can hand it to me, and I can do that part.
Oh, I can hand it to you, I see.
Don't act like you've never done this before.
Well, I... Sorry, he's signing for you. How's it going?
Good.
Yeah. This was probably not a fun job this winter, huh?
No.
All right, let the record show. I'm returning the pen. So if you don't get the pen, it's because William stole it.
No, I'm not going to steal the pen.
All right.
Okay.
Don't come back without pizza.
Thank you.
Yep. And then, you know what else?
I gave him a pretty good tip for putting up with the shit.
Did you really?
Yes. I'm a good tipper.
Besides the fact that I have to... you know, get up and do all this stuff. You're going to be eating, and then I have to talk. And remember, I'm off my...
game. Would it help if you had some of my pizza?
No.
It's got pork topping and bacon.
I love how you say those things like, are you sure? Here, let me entice you with...
Yeah.
I didn't eat pork when I ate meat.
I know. That's why it's so fun. Remember the time... You don't remember the time... I put a Big Mac in front of you at work. This is when he was my boss. And I set a Big Mac on his desk in front of him, and I pulled out $15. And I said, this is yours if you eat that.
I don't remember that. But I do remember you telling the story on the air before.
There are many layers of it. The first layer to get through has nothing to do with ethics or anything like that. Simply has to do with the cost of the impact it would have on my digestive system to eat it. And that is not worth $15. So full stop, we're already done.
That's what I said?
Yes, and unfortunately I had no other money or I would have sweetened the pot. And the hilarious bit is I could have found you all the people that would have eaten a Big Mac for $15. Get paid to eat a Big Mac. Like, yeah, no problem.
Yeah, but you wouldn't have offered them money.
No, exactly.
Most of them would have eaten the Big Mac without
any
money.
If I just said, you want a Big Mac? They would say, sure. I say, how about $15? Do you want that? And they say, sure.
So it's not really impressive.
Being a socially awkward vegan for the rest of your life also. And they'd say, no, you're going to have to get more.
Well, fortunately, before I was ever a vegan, I was plenty socially awkward.
Exactly.
Very practiced at it.
Anyway, as I was explaining to people, the hat, the email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, people write in. The hat, magically, on its own, transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the emails written on them that manifest physically within the hat. We randomly draw them out of the hat, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for an hour. That's the whole show.
Yeah, we just come here, look in the hat, and there's stuff in there. And the way it works is you guys write in, and we don't look at the stuff ahead of time. We don't decide which ones we're going to do in a given show. Whatever you send in, the hat puts it in itself, I guess you could say. And then we draw them out, just like Tony said, randomly.
Magic.
We don't rehearse. We don't discuss it ahead of time. Everything is a surprise to us every single time.
For those of you playing at home, they have these garlic parmesan pizzas right now, but they have them in combinations I'm not interested in. So I got the one that's just a bunch of cheeses, and then I added pork topping and bacon to it. And it's good.
And I'm supposed to sit here and figure out something to say while you're eating.
How was your week?
I never have anything interesting to say about that.
Never stops you.
Well, sometimes it does, but when I feel like I have to say something, like right now, I just end up saying uninteresting things.
Did you do anything this week?
No, not really. I mean, I just work. You know, I suppose I can tell people the Briar Rose project has...
Yeah, where is that?
Well, it's... There has been some technical difficulties that have put it on, you know, kind of a...
With the voice recordings or with...
Yeah, yeah, but it's all right. It'll get worked out. I'm not worried about it. It's just, you know, it's one of those things that, what I told everybody at the beginning was, you know, when you have a project like this and everyone's sort of volunteering their time and a lot of the people aren't even here, there's going to be things like this. I mean, for example, this hasn't happened yet, but I anticipate it will. You know, at some point in the hopefully not too distant future, I'm going to have all this stuff edited together and I'm going to need to get the thing scored. Well, you know, the guy who I'm going to have working on the score, he's just going to be doing it in his spare time. A score is a huge thing, so that's going to take a long, long time to do. So, I mean...
So you guys want to experience it, but your children will.
it's not going to be that bad, but I'm just saying, nothing that's happened was entirely unforeseen, you know. That's why I've been warning everybody... when I'm talking about this, and now keep in mind, this is a long-term project. Everyone's sort of donating their time, and people have to find free time to do X, Y, and Z. And then, of course, if you run into a technical problem, it might take a long time to get that technical problem resolved. So, nothing to worry about, but it is going to push the project back just a little bit. But that's all right. I mean, and I don't really have anything to report about it, and when I do, I will say something about it. But in the meantime, I'm working on that other large project I keep talking about that I'm determined to produce in one form or another, but I'm still not sure how that's going to happen. But that's par for the course for me in working on these projects. Eventually something works itself out, though, so I'm not too worried about that
either. Puppetry. Did I show you the video with the puppets in the restaurant and the toddler?
No.
Trish discovered it. It's a preview. Supposedly there's a full movie, but it's this interesting scene done in some sort of tropical restaurant scene, like at a resort or something, all done with puppets. And you start, and there's a puppet waiter looking at the camera and pouring what appears to be a beer into a glass. Now, it's all slightly smaller because the puppets are only like foot and a half tall. And then you turn, and the customer is an honest-to-goodness, real-life, probably one-year-old. In a nice dress and hat. And the beer is presumably apple juice. But they give it to her in a little fake mug, and she drinks it like a one-year-old. So she spills some on herself, and eventually you see they bring her juice in a wine glass that looks like wine, and she drinks it, and it spills more, and eventually she's just sort of, her front is soaked in various beverages. And she gets up, but she stumbles around a little bit. Meanwhile, the other puppets are having dinner, and there's real food on their plates. The puppets are cutting up, and so she just walks over to one and grabs the food off of it and just shoves it in her mouth and stumbles around and really just acting like a one-year-old. It's the most amazing. And meanwhile, the puppets are all staring at her aghast,
like she's a drunk adult.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's amazing to see. And it culminates really nicely as she starts to walk out and trips over a table and like flips it. I highly recommend it.
Okay.
These are the kind of film work for you. You like puppetry, and there's some good puppetry in it.
Yes, I do.
You like drunk babies.
I did some of that for a while. I was thinking about that on the way over here, all the stuff. I mean, I've written songs, I've written and performed puppet things, sketches of various kinds, including sketch comedy.
You're kind of a combination of, like, every character John Cusack has played.
I wrote a one-act play once that actually was not too bad. Written a few novels. I've done all this stuff.
Have you been a hitman? Because seriously, I like this John Cusack angle.
No, I've never been a hitman. But I don't know why I do all this stuff, really, when it comes down to it. Feel compelled to, really. I mean, I maybe we've talked about this before. I mean, when I get something in my head to do, it's like I just have to do it. Even if I don't think it's... Well, I never have an idea of whether or not it's going to be good, bad, you know, successful monetarily or anything like that. I just think of, well, I got to do it. And sometimes I'm satisfied with the result and sometimes I'm not. But at some point or the other, I feel like I've finally got to a point where I can walk away from it, you know, without obsessing about it anymore. And then that's when it's, you know, quote unquote done. You know, that's, you know what they say, these things are never really done. And that's true. But there does come a point where you feel like, okay, I can walk away from this now. I'm not going to feel like something's unfinished.
I just wish you were more into the doing, because I come up with ideas all the time, and I tell them to you, and then I think you should do them.
Well,
because we know I ain't going to do them.
No,
I told a coworker my Golden Girls project idea again. He thought it was brilliant.
No, I would never do that. But there are
you
other...
You agreed to participate.
No, I didn't.
You did. I think you play Estelle Getty's role.
No, I don't think so. But, I mean, there are other things you suggested that I like that, you know, they're on the list of things to do.
Yeah, and there's stuff we're theoretically working on.
Yeah, right, but I don't, you know, I don't really know where all that comes from. It just, something gets in my head and I do it. And it, you know, usually when I finish something, it turns out okay. I mean, it good enough that if someone in the know looked at it, they'd say, oh yeah, that's okay. I don't think I've ever done anything that anyone would look at and say, wow, that's really outstanding.
I just love a movie poster that just has, quote, dot, 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 okay, dot, 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 quote.
I mean, I've done some things that are better than okay, I think. But,
you guys see Drugstore Cowboy? That was him.
Shut up.
What?
But, you know, I'm not, I'm, well, I guess.
You guys heard of Martin Scorsese? Who did all his movies? William made Martin Scorsese.
The point I'm trying to make here is that I don't do it because I get a huge amount of positive feedback from it, or because anyone is telling me, hey, you're amazing, you should do this more often, or I'm certainly not making a huge amount of money from it. So I don't know what it's...
It was for the drugs and the women.
No. Well, there aren't any
drugs
or women.
There's two theories as to why you're doing it.
Theory? What?
There are two theories.
Who's making theories?
Me.
Oh.
This is me again trying to place you in society.
I thought you said that couldn't be
because
done.
Because I know, but this is the closest we can do. The closest analog we have is normal people.
Okay.
You, so this is what we work
by the on. Way, I don't agree with his assertion that I don't fit into normal. I mean, I'm.
But
I'm
everyone
just
in the world does agree with
him. No, I'm just an ordinary person, just like everybody else when it comes right down
so
to it.
There are a lot of people who do lots of stuff like this, and they seem sort of driven, and they don't necessarily know why. There's usually two thoughts about it.
Okay.
One, the nice one.
The nice one. Why don't we start with the mean one? Oh, no, the mean one going second has better comic effect. Is that what we're...
Exactly, yeah.
All right, never mind.
The nice one is you would just have a true artist soul and you were pursuing art. Nay, beauty, nay, truth.
You don't think that's what it is, I can tell.
I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
Saying that's
I feel it. I can feel it.
I will say that insofar as artists frequently think they know which one it is, they think it's that one.
Well, I don't know.
I'm not drawing that.
I don't claim to know.
The second one is not so much that you are working towards something, but working away from something. Keeping busy so that you don't have to think or deal with who you are as a person. You're just always doing, and you're never being.
Well, it's certainly not that one.
Must be the first one, then.
No. There's got to be a third one.
No, I hit. That was right.
No, there has to be a...
Blackmail? Somebody has pictures of you and said, make all this art or else we're going to put this on the internet?
There's got to be a third reasonable one, I'm saying.
I don't think so. If you have a third reasonable answer, go to the blog and tell William why his life is the way it is. TheMagicalTalkingHat.com.
I know what it is. I mean, I don't.
You just said you didn't know.
Well, I don't know specifically. I know what the ballpark is. It's
when you were 9, you bumped into a gypsy woman.
It's mental illness.
That's your answer to everything.
No, it is not my answer to everything. It's my answer to this though. I've got some kind of mental problem. That's what I think it is.
Well, I won't argue that.
No, that's.
But wait, your mental problem manifests in producing art? How tragic.
Well, art. I mean, that's my kind of my point. It's debatable if there really is art or if it's any good, you know.
Well,
I mean,
still, your mental illness that produces mediocre art, that's still way better than most mental illness.
Well, I don't know. I don't function very well. You know, I mean, like, it's kind of like a obsessive compulsive thing. even. Kind of. Maybe. I don't know. See, I don't know. But I think, I don't, the soul of an artist thing sounds a little bit too, I don't know, that doesn't sound right.
Douchey.
I don't know. I don't.
That's what you were thinking, you just didn't want to use that word.
No, I don't, I wasn't thinking that at all. I don't even really know what that means exactly, but it just seems kind of pretentious, maybe? And it just seems off the mark. But I don't think I'm avoiding any. In fact, it seems like it's almost narcissistic. It's like I'm doing the exact opposite. There's a lot of soul searching and trying to understand who I am and stuff, which I actually find kind of annoying.
You don't want to be pretentious about your narcissism?
I don't want to be narcissistic. I don't want to sit there and think about myself and my little inner universe all the time. I mean, that's what could be more boring than that?
Then you should watch more TV.
Yeah, whatever. You know what? If you're going to take a pause and you're eating, why don't you talk about your week? Because I'm sure you have a lot of more interesting things to say. See what I'm saying? I sit here and talk, and I don't say anything interesting at all, and I bore myself.
I don't really have nothing going on this week. I'm still going to the gym. Producer is still going to the gym. And we're doing good at that. I still can just do... I did a little stretching starting today, but I still just can do the cardio. But I'm keeping up with it. I think it's made me sleeping better again. So
oh,
that's good.
That's good.
I'm screwing around with Skyrim now that I have tremendous godlike powers.
Okay. But how did you get tremendous godlike powers?
There's an exploit. There's something you can do in the game that basically one thing makes another thing greater, and you do the first thing again, and then it makes the next thing greater, and it sort of becomes a cycle, and then eventually you have the ability to make really powerful potions. And really powerful potions can lead you to make really powerful enchantments and really powerful smithing. And then it's just all over.
Then you're just walking through the world, something gets in your way.
22,000 health and magicka and stamina and weapons that do hundreds of points of damage. But bows that can one-shot kill dragons. No problem. Stealth that is so good that I can be stealth and I can headbutt people in broad daylight and they don't see me. Lockpicking that doesn't even matter. You know how the game works where you have to find the right spot and turn it? I just turn it. It opens. I can carry 10,000 pounds.
What? That's a... How did you do all that? Okay. Is it a cheat or something?
Technically, it's not a cheat. It's an exploitable... It's a thing the programmers didn't think through.
Oh.
Let me explain. No one will understand this.
All right.
You enchant a bunch of stuff to fortify your alchemy. You put it on. You make a potion of fortify restoration. You take all the alchemy stuff off, and you drink that potion. Fortify restoration. Restoration as a whole, one of its effects is it improves fortify skill stuff. So you put all the alchemy stuff back on while you're under the effect of that potion, the alchemy stuff is better. So really quickly, before the potion wears off, you make another Fortify Restoration potion. And this one is better than the last one. You take the stuff off, you drink that potion, you put stuff on, it's even better. Repeat, 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 but don't repeat so far that the numbers get into negative billions, because eventually the system just can't cope with the numbers and it starts going negative, and that's not useful. But if you stop at the right time, you got potions that'll do thousands and thousands and thousands of percents better. And then I took it and made a fortify enchantment and then quickly went and enchanted something that fortifies alchemy. So then I had a circlet that fortified my alchemy by 90,000%. So then I could just make potions all I wanted like this. And hijinks ensued.
Huh. Well, we didn't know about that. Where'd you find that little trick?
Some people had mentioned it. I found the details on a wiki, but people had mentioned it before.
Oh, well.
I think it got patched up on the PC version, but never on the console version.
I see.
And at first, because I did something similar in Oblivion. Oblivion had a different thing, but I had another thing that was game-breaky like that,
which nobody could
do anything with. And I got bored of it real fast, and I never finished Oblivion. And I started to get bored of this one, but I've found ways to make my own fun.
Okay.
For starters, I just jump off things now. because I can't die from a fall. There is no fall in the game. So if I'm going someplace and there's a cliff, I just jump off the cliff. My house in Markarth, it's way up on the hill. I just jump off the hill to the shops below. No problem. The thing I'm stuck with right now is there's some really cool looking armor in the game, but it's story armor, for lack of a better term. So it already has enchantments on it and stuff, and I can't make it, and I can't re-enchant it. And it's only my cool shit that gives me my superpower. So if I put on the cool-looking armor, I don't have my superpowers. So I've had to get really creative with which superpowers do I need that I can get just a few slots I can do with jewelry pieces, and then I can wear cool armor. So that's what I've been worried about lately. I'm having fun. It's weird. I was worried I would not, but it's still fun. But what it's not is at all interesting. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Okay.
Let's hat it up.
Why not? That is why we're here. Not to hear me talk about my stupid week.
Oh, stupid week.
Dear Tony and William.
Yes?
This is from Craig, by the way.
Craig Duffy.
Hello, Craig. How are you? You know, you should go to the blog and let us know how you're doing, because we haven't heard from you.
For all we know, Scotland died. No, wait, you're not in Scotland. Southeast England died.
Tell us if you're in favor of Scotland's independence.
Is that becoming a thing again? Or is that just this constant standing thing?
No, I thought that was a thing again. Maybe I don't know what I'm talking about.
I mean, there's always a contingent that's in favor of
it. No, but like it's been in the news or something. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe I...
Set us straight, Craig. We don't know shit about shit.
This is an interesting question that, in some ways, it's kind of surprising it hasn't come up before, but then again, it seems like a debate that's sort of nobody has anymore.
Please share with the class.
Mac or PC?
Oh. Well, I vastly prefer eating macaroni over being politically correct.
Well,
strongly so.
Eating macaroni is definitely not politically correct.
Yeah, that's why they're opposed.
Yeah, but...
I much prefer John Hodgman to Justin Long. So, I mean, there's that. It's sort of a silly debate, especially because the answer doesn't stay the same. Like, if you pick Mac or PC at a certain point in the history of computers, it's a very different answer than other times. There are times when Mac was the clear winner. There are times when PC was the clear winner.
Well, I think the only way to answer it is not so much on the basis of like what you're talking about, I think, which is at any given period of time, which one has a better processor, which one seems to be more trouble-free, relatively speaking, and what which one has the best programs and stuff for it. I think the only reasonable way to look at it or to try to answer the question is, it gets down to what people typically debated when it came to the question of PC or Mac is, do you want something that you pay a little bit more for that's relatively trouble-free and that, is limited in its software options, or do you want something that is a little bit cheaper because you can buy cloned. What do they call the machines?
They call them clones back in the day.
IBM clones or IBM compatibles is what they call them. You can get the machine cheaper because of that, and also you can get the software cheaper. Again, there's just tons of different types of software. However, because you don't have anyone controlling the software development process and insisting that only this software works with this machine or whatever, you pay for it on the other end with sometimes the software doesn't work very well and you have to troubleshoot it. But a lot of people preferred that. In fact, some people liked the PC because it was kind of like how people, like gearheads, like cars, it doesn't matter if the car breaks down a lot because that's part of the fun, spending the weekend fixing up your car.
Things with it. The Macs traditionally were pretty much a black box and still sort of are.
Right.
Like, you're going to be taken care of with a Mac.
Right, and what happened there, too, is that as a consequence of that aspect of the products, Max appealed to educators and artists and things like that. And as a result, even though there wasn't a broad array of software options, some of the best software for those kinds of things, art applications and education application, did come with the Mac. So,
and because it was a closed shop, the security was much better.
Yes, yes, yes. When it came down to it, you had the PC people tended to think of the Mac people as not being technically savvy, you know, being the kind of people that weren't really into computers, didn't really understand computers. They wanted a computer that was going to do a lot of their work for them, and the PC people thought themselves to be very sophisticated with computers, and they could deal with a computer that sometimes needed a little TLC or needed a little setting up, going into the settings and messing with them, because they were very smart about computers. So, you know, it wasn't going to be a big deal for them to troubleshoot these software problems. So they felt a little bit technologically superior to the Mac people, and the Mac people felt that they just had a better machine, you know, that they were somehow smarter because they knew that paying that little extra bit of money was, you know, whatever. So there was that kind of status thing going back and forth between those two groups. But anyone who didn't have that status investment in the debate sort of looked at it like, well, it's really kind of apples and oranges, really. I mean, you know, if basically you sit down, you decide what it is you want a computer to do for you, and you just pick the right one.
The producer is a Mac owner, has been just about as long as we've been together. But she knows PCs inside and out. She did tech support for them. She currently tests software for them. Like, she knows PCs. She works with PCs, but she has Mac at home. When she first got her Mac, it was very interesting for her because there were a lot of things you do differently on a Mac.
Sure.
And what she always said was, I always had to catch myself and say, okay, if I was an idiot, what would be the way to do it? Not in a way that you have to think stupidly, but in that it was always very simple and intuitive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas on PCs, you know, go to the submenu or whatever.
Why did she get a Mac?
I don't know. You'd have to ask her. But she's not in the building right now.
Oh, you never asked her, or she never said?
We may have talked about it. I don't remember. Now she mostly lives on her iPad. And again, we're a split house. I have a PC machine. I have an Android tablet. To be fair, I didn't pick the tablet. I won it. But when it dies, I will get another Android device.
Well, I've always gotten PCs only because they're cheap.
The price differential is not insignificant, especially these days.
Yeah, they were always cheaper. My software requirements weren't huge. I wasn't like a gamer or something, so I didn't really anticipate having any problems having to troubleshoot my machine, and I never had really any issues with that.
And I feel like the software gap is pretty much gone.
Well, that's true, too. And
there are still some things, if you're a gamer, that it may take a little longer for it to show up on Mac, but it's really only sort of...
Yeah.
That's rare.
And also, I don't have a problem troubleshooting the machine either. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
So, putting it all together, the PC just seemed like the price difference, the savings I was going to get was worth it. I mean, I've looked at Macs. When I worked for Sears, I sold them. I sold PCs and Macs.
And Craftsman tools.
No. Televisions, stereos, sewing machines, vacuum cleaners, entertainment centers.
It was a weird little niche you carved for yourself.
Well, not what was weird about it was just the electronics department. The weird part was that the sewing machines and vacuum cleaners were part of the electronics department. But otherwise, phones, answering machines, not cell phones though.
Because those are not electronics.
Well, it's
those are magic.
No, it's more because I was working there in 1996 or something like that. I mean,
they were made out of rubber.
No, but it's just crack. Not, it wasn't a thing that you would go into Sears and see.
Oh, so they didn't have them?
I think there were
Who
a couple.
Who was selling them? Who? I want a name.
In the middle 90s, I don't remember. They were selling them, but I don't remember.
Those were just the damn ones like Zach Morris had on.
You know, maybe they were starting to sell them then. I don't remember that.
Maybe you got fired because you were unwilling to sell cell phones.
I didn't get fired. I left Sears. I don't remember why I left. I mean, I worked at Applied Systems, you know, where we worked after.
I do remember.
Right after that.
Applied Systems, yes.
So I don't, but I don't think I went directly from Sears to Applied Systems. I think I worked somewhere else or something. I don't know.
Well, you didn't start at Applied till like
98.
So, okay.
98. Well, I think I did go directly from Sears. Oh, yeah. What happened was Sears moved from the mall that's over here by that you live by.
Yes.
This mall over here. They moved to Coralville, and I left there around the same time they moved.
And later, they would reopen a small thing here, and then even later, it would just be gone from everywhere.
And before...
So that was the beginning of the end.
Before I left Sears, since they were moving to the new mall, they were getting rid of some old stuff they had.
And like one, you?
No, one of the old things they had was a Santa suit.
Oh, damn it.
And that's where I got the Santa suit.
This is the invention of Scrawny Claws right here?
Yeah, that's where I got it.
Oh, Sears, I have a vendetta on you now.
It's like they had it was in a garbage bag or whatever. And
William made the sketchiest Santa ever.
And they thought, and they wanted to know who wanted it. Oh, yeah, I'll take that. So that's where I got
They're like, if there was an axe murder or a child molestation case in the area, everybody was like, where's Scrawny Claws?
No, come on, it wasn't like that.
You look pretty freaky.
Okay, but...
Man refused to put a pillow in there.
Because it would just slip into my pants. I knew that from experience. So I wasn't going to do that. You put a pillow in there, and it stays up in the belly, even if you have a belt, for a little while, and then it goes down into your pants, and then you're skinny on top, and like... Yeah. No. It does not work like that. I don't remember precisely when that was that I learned that, but it was very...
It clearly was a formative moment.
Well, I think I was playing Santa Claus for some kids. I think at like a concert. Like it was.
And you were like, ho, 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 I guess the baby came early.
It was like a Christmas pageant kind of thing, and the kids weren't supposed to know Santa was going to show up. And here comes Santa. Hey, Santa Claus. And
did they scream?
No. I don't think the kids really noticed or minded, you know. It's just Santa Claus, but...
I'm traumatized just hearing about it.
I don't know if that... Because, see, this thing I'm thinking about, I don't think it was me. I think it was my brother, and he was Santa Claus that year.
It happened to a friend of mine.
See, my family had a Santa suit. You know, when we were growing up...
I find that... phenomenally unsurprising.
When we were growing up...
I'm actually kind of surprised at how unsurprising I find that.
Santa came every Christmas. I mean, we have pictures of it. Mm-hmm. And you can tell by looking at the pictures who was playing Santa that year. And it's not often a man. Sometimes it was a woman.
In Trisha's family, the Christmas Eve tradition where the whole family got together up at the farm, Santa showed up, and it varied over the years.
Yeah, so every year... And I don't remember when that stopped, but... You know, I've said before that we didn't have any traditions that lasted for 20 years or whatever, and that's true, but we did have some traditions that lasted the whole time we were young children. My mom made May baskets for all of, when we were in elementary school, for every year each one of us was in elementary school, my mom made May baskets for our whole class.
To be fair, they were full of soybeans.
No, they had caramel corn and candy and pixie sticks, and they were awesome.
What about flowers? That's the whole point of...
No, it was just candy and stuff. But, and Santa came every Christmas until, you know, we didn't believe in Santa Claus anymore. Easter baskets. We had Easter baskets clear
up
until
we were...
Did you
stop believing because one person looked so unrealistic in the outfit?
No, it's just,
like,
you know, it just happened. But, and then we had Easter baskets every year for a while until we got, you know, too old. The Tooth Fairy came when we lost a tooth. We celebrated our birthdays with a kind of a big party every year. No, people would, like, my grandparents who lived in Greenfield, which was like an hour and a half away, they'd come.
Yeah, and these are not particularly unique traditions.
I'm not saying they are. I'm just saying that these are the things we did for, I don't know, until...
Until you hit 8 or 9 or 10.
Yeah, but then after that, really had no traditions that, you know, continued on until we were out.
Except Dr. Pepper.
So, yeah, except Dr. Pepper. So, and since, you know, there were five of us kids, and only one of us had any kids, and he lives in Alaska, and he lived in Minnesota or whatever before that. So we might have carried on some of those traditions if any of us had had, you know, children, but we didn't. So I realize that's probably the biggest reason we didn't have 20 years worth of traditions, because there were no kids. All the traditions we had were about kids, not really adults.
I know.
How did we get into this?
That we have a tendency to go off topic, but this one's amazing. The question was Mac or PC.
I know.
And I'm not saying it's bad, but it's fascinating. I can't recall how we got here either. Mac or PC, William doesn't believe in Santa Claus anymore. And he might have continued it on, but his brother's kids live in Alaska.
Yeah, that's kind of what happened. Well, now the Santa suit that I got at Sears...
Goddamn scrawny clothes.
We did use a couple times when my brother with the kids was back over Christmas. I think I wore it once, and one of my other brothers wore it once. So when they did come back, there Santa was back. So see, that so kind of, like, proves my point.
Santa just hates Alaska.
I guess. I still have the Santa suit, by the way.
I am unsurprised at that also.
You know, the funny thing is, I'm not really a big fan of Santa Claus, but I've played Santa.
But you're a big fan of Scrawny Claus.
Well, it's just,
you loved being Scrawny Claus.
Yes, I did. That was awesome.
You were way into Scrawny Claus.
And I was always a fan of that story, Night Before Christmas. You know.
Yeah.
I when I was a kid, I read it. There was a Christmas pageant thing, you know, for our school, and they had me play like an old man, and I read it to like the kids. But I mean, I was 12 or 13 myself, you know, but anyway.
Dressed up like Grandma Moses.
No, I was like an old man, not an old woman.
Grandma Moses is the one who wrote it.
But.
Or maybe she's the one who did the illustrations in the book I had.
I don't know.
It was Grandma Moses, the author, artist.
People. No, the author was.
King David.
Oh, gosh. I hate it when I can't remember things.
Tony Randall.
Which means I hate things a lot.
Matt Modine.
I really have a hard time remembering things. No.
Who are you again?
You know what? Maybe we should just draw another thing.
All right. So, the answer, Craig, is we are PC people, but we also think it really doesn't fucking matter.
Not really. But I mean, unless there's something that the Mac has that you really want, and you don't mind paying the extra money, then get the Mac.
I like that we're a split house, so that we can sort of pick from both. Also, John Hodgman rules, Justin Long drools. All right. This one is straight and to the point. It has no greeting, and it is unsigned. What are your feelings about Kurt Vonnegut?
I don't have any feelings about Kurt Vonnegut.
I have always found him attractive, but he won't return any of my letters.
Wait.
Have you read any Vonnegut?
Isn't he dead?
If he is, he's very recently dead. Have you read any Vonnegut?
A very little bit.
Trish read me part of Cat's Cradle, I think. And then we stopped, sort of. I've never seen the movie for Slaughterhouse-Five, let alone read it. I have very little feeling about Kurt Vonnegut. You know, it was interesting that I discovered just the other day, through some sort of wiki wormhole I went down, I learned about William S. Burroughs.
I don't think I know who that is.
He was a beat author, possibly best known for having written Naked Lunch, which later turned into a really fucked up Cronenberg film. But here's the thing. The Cronenberg film is not really the same story as what's in Naked Lunch. It takes elements, but it's very different. And it also has actually a lot more to do with Burroughs and the writing of the book. But what freaks me out, because I saw Naked Lunch years ago, and I remember almost nothing about it. I might have been high. I don't remember for sure, because I remember very little. But there's a thing that happens twice in the movie, because he deals with his wife, and later he deals with his wife's doppelganger. And in both cases, he ends up doing essentially a William Tell kind of trick, and accidentally shoots her in the head. And he does it twice. It's freaky. The reason this is in the movie?
Mm-hmm.
Motherfucker did this in real life.
Is that right?
He was common law married to this woman. They're living in Mexico, and they were drunk one night and at a party, and he did a William Tell thing and shot her in the head and then fled to the U.S., which is hilarious to me. Somebody flees to the U.S. But yeah, when he was pretty young and never did no time for it or anything, that's like some Laura Bush shit there.
Some what?
Laura Bush. Laura Bush killed a guy when she was young and has never suffered
anything. What?
She killed a family friend, accidentally ran him over with a car and killed him. Never has been brought to justice for anything. Yes, the former First Lady, Laura Bush, killed a dude when she was young.
Jeez. And has
suffered no repercussions.
Well, I mean, everybody knows United States, there's not one law for everybody.
Yeah. But this is the same thing with him. He eventually got convicted in absentia in Mexico and given a 2-year suspended sentence. Which, also, there's like 4 things wrong with that sentence. And most of the interesting bits of his life, he was super addicted to heroin. Weird, weird shit.
Well, the Vonnegut I've read, I thought was... Yeah,
by the way, that was William S. Burroughs, nothing to do with Vonnegut.
The Vonnegut I've, what you get on this I've read was, you know, it was well written. I mean, it was interesting to read, but it just didn't do anything for me. But, you know,
William doesn't do super well with other people's books.
That's not true. There's a lot of fiction that I've read that I like. It's just not a lot of fiction that I like.
What?
It's not impossible for me to like a piece of fiction.
I didn't say in general. You don't read a lot
of fiction, no.
And of the stuff that I have managed to force you to read, it has not, as near as I can tell, had a large impact on you.
Not really. But why did you say I have a problem with other people's books? Like,
because you're way into yours. I mean, you spend most of your life poring over writing them.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you like them, but they definitely have a much bigger impact on your life, and you put a lot of more time and energy into it.
That's true.
Which one could say that's probably true about anybody who writes books. But in your case, it's particularly true.
Vonnegut has significance in this area because he had a pretty huge impact on the writer's workshop here at the University of Iowa.
Did he? I did not know this. Tell me this story.
He did. Well, it's not much of a story. I mean, I think he was here even. And
what the crap are you doing?
I think there's even a house called the Vonnegut House where he was supposed to deliver something. I don't know all the details of it, actually.
I did forget. There was something interesting that is germane to this that I did this week.
Okay.
A friend of mine... She used to be a friend of a friend, but she's pretty much a friend now, but we don't see her a lot. She's actually the reason we got into roller derby. Because she was on the team and we went to cheer her on. Anyway, she is finishing up her FMA in the nonfiction writer's workshop at University of Iowa.
Okay.
And she did her thesis as a piece of performance. She took a bunch of essays she wrote about her own life, and she and 2 actresses did a little performance thing. One time, open to the public at the Englert, called Love, Sex, and Shoes, I believe, or possibly Sex, Love, Shoes. I don't remember. And we went to see it.
How alliterative.
It was very interesting. I think I enjoyed it. It was very disconcerting for me. In a way that I think is because I know her. Like, we all may be familiar with these. They're frequently one man or one woman shows. This happened to be 3, but it was still all her voice. She just had different people performing bits. And they really sort of, you know, bare their soul on stage and
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing. And they're always fascinating. I've never had one where I knew the person.
Mm.
And so it was a little freaky. And I was a little prepared that I was going to learn things about her that I was not comfortable knowing. I was not prepared for the fact that I was going to learn things about her young daughter, who I knew as a little kid, but is now 15, that I was not prepared to know. For some interesting passages that I'm like, oh my god, I'll never be able to look that girl in the eyes again. But in general, I was pretty impressed and pretty pleased with it. And it's very weird to me because it's the non-fiction writer's workshop.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it was still dramatic. So, is there really a difference in the writing style if it's real or not? Because, I mean, she easily could have lied about parts of this. Like, who the fuck knows?
To make it more interesting?
Yeah. And I don't know that it... Like, I find it very weird that that's... Especially if you're going to take it to this degree, that that's the distinction you make.
Well,
in teaching.
Yeah. Well, the interesting part to me is that I guess I didn't know there was a fiction and nonfiction distinction in
I wasn't
instruction.
Aware either until
and,
this came up.
And one of the things that would make me question the validity of that distinction from a teaching perspective is, well, where do you put something like a memoir?
Yeah.
Where does that,
in nonfiction.
Where does that go, really? Because, yes, obviously, you're supposedly telling an autobiographical, you know, account of your life. But at the same time, I think we all recognize that it's coming from one person's perspective. I think it's generally accepted that, you know, people...
How are you doing?
People embellish.
This is causing all sorts of trouble.
People embellish a little bit to make it more interesting, if only to omit the things that would make something less interesting.
My memoirs are always 100% true, except in my memoirs I am 1.5 inches taller. Otherwise, it's all exactly true.
Well, no, we won't get into that. But so yeah, that's interesting. I didn't really know they did that.
Yeah, I found it a little weird, but it was cool. I liked it. Yeah, we don't know shit about Vonnegut.
I don't really either. Like I said,
that's
he's...
why I said we.
He's in... Oh, sorry.
You thought I was using the royal we.
No, I thought you said
you
I.
You would not be
I didn't hear you.
For thinking I said that. I do think of myself
that way. I probably should know more about him just because of his impact on the Writer's Workshop
yeah,
and stuff here.
So
when someone comes into town and I'm telling them about the Writer's Workshop at the university, I should be able to say, yeah, Kurt Vonnegut, who... Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
I'm just
so on and so on and so on.
William Gibson's Bridge Trilogy. I'm a little tired of Gibson. I love Gibson. I mean, I read the whole Sprawl Trilogy, and I've read this, and I've enjoyed it, but I don't know. I think I'm a little tired of him. I want to switch to somebody more fun. Or possibly go back to Neal Stephenson. Yeah. There's shit
I really
Neal Stephenson.
I have not read any Gibson at all.
That's
which
a shame.
It's strange that because I think most people who know me would expect I would either have read it or it would be on my list of things to read, but nope.
Years ago, I read Neuromancer. Many years ago. And then recent years ago, I picked it up again and realized it was part of a trilogy and read all three of them. And then just very recently, when I was looking for some science fiction to read, I found out... I mean, I'd known of some of Gibson's other materials, but I had not known about the Bridge Trilogy, which he wrote in the 90s. And so I picked that up, and I've been reading that. All right.
One more, huh?
Again? Yeah, but we have to talk quick.
Well, it's... We hardly ever draw more than one these days.
We drew two already.
I know, but in the last several shows.
They've been very serious. Tonight is just all about Scrawny Claws, and Scrawny Claws being presence in the forms of emails.
The producer.
The
You know, she signs
producer.
It, love the producer.
That's not for you.
I know.
That's for me.
It's just for you.
Yeah.
It makes me feel a little left out, I have to be honest and say.
Oh. Did you want in on our marriage?
Huh? What? What'd you say?
I said, did you want in on our marriage?
No, nothing like that. It's just...
Ezzy loves you. Ezzy really loves you.
No, she doesn't.
She does. Remember, she's always all up in your business.
Okay. Assertion. The sci-fi of my childhood had something it wanted to say. Today's sci-fi just wants to look pretty. Discuss.
God damn it. This is not a short question.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I mean,
I think this is something that we hit on many times, because you and I talk about our love for speculative fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, that's what science fiction started off as.
Right, which is why I like a lot of the early science fiction, because it's speculative fiction.
And then it becomes a thing where, and I don't know, this will piss some people off or whatever, I understand there's some deep-rooted themes in there, and some classic tales built into it, but Star Wars is basically fantasy action with using high tech instead of magic.
But isn't that a given?
Some people think it's way deeper than that.
Well, whether or not it's deeper, it's not speculative or science fiction. It's like it's
science,
a Western
is usually the thing.
Western put in space, or like fantasy, like you said.
But that's the thing. Like, I don't think that Star Wars has a message. And you could argue there are certain motifs and themes and shit, but nobody's trying to say shit with Star Wars.
You don't think so?
I do not think so.
I mean, because...
Except for, look how cool I can make things appear.
What? I mean, because Lucas was very specifically and deliberately pulling things out of Joseph Campbell and Hero's Journey and...
Yeah, if you retell the Hero's Journey, I don't think of that as you having a message. I think of that as you plagiarizing the oldest story in existence.
I think there was sometimes the message was not very good, but it was, well, for example, the fact that in the first two films, all of their plans pretty much failed, except that R2-D2 sort of bailed them out. And really, R2-D2 is the hero of these two films. That was a very deliberate thing to do. And then in the third film, R2-D2 almost did it again, but he got shot. And then the Ewoks, the little, diminutive, no technology, they're the ones that saved the... Again, not very interesting, original, or anything else, but it was still there.
I think you give Lucas way too much credit.
I'm saying it wasn't a very good message or a very well-put-together message, but it was there, is what I'm saying.
I believe it was there on accident.
I don't think so.
I definitely...
So even if Lucas said, no, this is, that's what I intended to do, you would think, he's saying that now.
No, pretty much at this point, if Lucas says, I intended to do X, no matter what it is, I think he's lying, first of all.
I'm sure he is sometimes. I think you're probably right about that.
Anything he says at this point, pretty much I believe the opposite of whatever he says about his intention with those films at this point. But also beyond that, no, I think he worked with some very standard tropes and themes, and consequently, some of the things shook out in such a way that are interesting on accident.
Okay.
I think he's a shitty storyteller. I think he's a really good special effects guy.
Well, and that might be true, but I mean, I think there are some people who've made this same argument, and I tend to agree, about, say, Stephen King, a guy who can sit down, he can pull together a lot of interesting themes and a lot of deep characters and character interactions, but the fact is, he's not putting that much work or depth into it. A lot of people come to the story and sort of, because his themes are so, like you said, he uses tropes and archetypes and whatever, people bring their own stuff to it, and they think he means to say a lot of things that he doesn't necessarily mean to say.
I think an argument could definitely be made for that. I think an argument could be made that in a lot of ways Stephen King is the paper version of George Lucas. But I feel like...
But these are the people telling stories in our childhood that she's talking about, right? Or she's...
No. Because she grows up with a guy who reads science fiction and stuff. I think she's talking Edgar Rice Burroughs. I think she's talking Isaac Asimov. I think she's talking...
Arthur C. Clarke.
Yes.
Heinlein.
Exactly.
I love those guys. I mean, their stuff is so
good to me. I have a lot of ambivalence about some of those guys. But they were going for something. They weren't making cool stories. They were saying, here's a concept. Isn't this interesting?
But it was a cool story, though.
A lot of them turned out to be, yes.
Yeah.
Which was wonderful. Robert Silverberg, I put in there. Some people don't know him as well. But
He actually did a project with Isaac Asimov that's really, really good.
Did he?
Yeah.
He did one with, no, it wasn't him. Philip K. Dick and Roger Zelazny went in together on a novel that was horrible.
Well, I haven't read Philip K. Dick either, although I'm sure I would.
But the same
everything
thing,
I've ever heard about those novels I'd like. So
the assertion, explanation for the assertion, yeah, back in those days, that's what science fiction was about. It wasn't, here's a story, let's put it in space. It was, let's say we're in space. What the fuck would that mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Well,
what would happen if we didn't have to worry about resources anymore?
Right, right.
What would happen if we actually met a species that existed in a completely alien set from ours?
Sure, but also the very basics of speculative fiction, like, let's say that these scientific principles that we know today play out.
Yes.
How might they play
absolutely,
out?
Absolutely, absolutely.
That was one of the best things about a lot of Arthur C. Clarke and Asimov, and well, Heinlein too. And also the speculations that you're talking about.
Heinlein was way more into some social
engineering. Yeah, that's true.
But it's still the same principle.
Yeah.
What if people weren't, his big one, what if people weren't so fucking uptight about stuff? He was just obsessed
with
it.
No, right, that's right.
A lot of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And a lot of them, what if perspective. And these things still exist, but you have to seek them out now. Diaspora, that novel I read, was amazing speculative fiction on so many levels. It took the fairly traditional now concept of artificial life and actually moving one's consciousness from a biological being into an artificial one, and took it to such amazing and quite plausible conclusions, and the evolution of life within that paradigm that were amazing to me. Dense as shit. Hurt your head to read, but amazing stuff. In Time, the stupid Justin Timberlake movie. Pretty mediocre film, but was doing that. Was exactly doing that. It took the arbitrary concept, what if literally your life force was the currency? About Time, the one I just talked about recently. What if you could redo stuff? What if you could redo what you perceived of as mistakes in your life? Things like this. Goddamn Almost Human.
I was just going to bring that
up. Several levels.
I was just going to bring that up.
What do we do if technology gets to the point that it's full on impossible to police and control anymore? And to say nothing of the standard, what do we consider life? What do we consider human?
Right.
We had both of those.
Yeah, and they do a better job than a lot of speculative fiction has done recently in actually.
In television.
Well, true. To actually figure out, well, what kinds of technologies would those be?
Yes,
real technologies, not the stupid stuff you see on Fringe where they're doing ridiculous stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, real stuff.
Shit that could happen.
Yeah, real plausible stuff. So, and some of it's a little fringe-like, but mostly.
Well, yeah, when we get into synthetic soul, we're winging it. But we have to. That's the jump we have to make. Otherwise, it's just an essay.
But, you know, and that's why I have sort of a weakness for that show, is because there's someone's really doing the work, you know, to try to figure this out, and it's kind of nice to see that.
But that's not what puts the butts in seats. What puts the butts in seats is vampires fighting werewolves. And superheroes, goddamn Avengers. Don't get me wrong, I loved Avengers. Avengers is not fucking speculative fiction.
No.
What if we took all the superheroes and put them together, even though they didn't get along real well? No, that's not speculative fiction. Fucking A. And also, I think part of the reason they all just want to look pretty now is they're not new stories, in a very literal sense. Avengers is from the goddamn 60s, I think, if not the 50s. They're not new stories, so now they're just like, how can we make them as pretty as possible?
Well, there were a lot of things about the Nolan Batman movies that totally were not very Batman-like. None of them really focused on his detective abilities very much.
No.
at all. But that's a huge part of his character in the comic books. Huge. I mean, he's like Sherlock Holmes. That's the
thing. Those movies almost would have been better if they weren't Batman movies, because I feel like they were speculative.
About some things, yeah.
But in a way that, yeah, but it would, if you, you could have just made a cool character there.
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
That would have worked better. We're way over time, so we should wrap this up.
Oh, that was sorry. A cool question, sorry, maybe. Producer. We didn't.
I think we kind of agree with you, though. But it still exists. You just have to go looking for it now. It's not necessarily the mainstream. And I'm not sure it was the mainstream back then, either.
Oh, no, probably not.
You had a really geeky dad, so. You still have a really geeky dad. Anyway, thank you all for joining us.
Mm-hmm.
Next time, we'll do it on ice skates.
No, we won't.
We know. But join us again next week for...
Not ice skates.
No. Yeah, not ice skates.
Yeah.
All right.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.